You're listening to The Warehouse, a Speaking of show by WFSU. This episode originally aired on February 13th, 2025, and is being re-aired to celebrate the one-year anniversary of the Radio Hour. In this episode, host Josh Johnson sat down with Roy Wood Jr., the renowned comedian, actor, and proud Florida A&M University alumnus. They discuss his journey from FAMU to stand-up comedy, his time on The Daily Show, and how his Tallahassee roots shaped his career.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Speaking Of today. I am with a cultural juggernaut of epic proportions.
Of two kind.
What is two kind?
I'm not a juggernaut. I'm on cable every now and then. That's what I am.
Well, here, you're a juggernaut because you're talking to a two-time FAMU grad and you're a favorite son of my favorite institution. So I appreciate you being with us.
Appreciate you
Mr.
for having
Roy
me.
Roy Wood Jr. So here you are, where it kind of all cosmetically started for you in the School of Journalism, right?
Yeah, not this building. This building nice. We was in Tucker Hall. We was in the struggle. You don't know about the struggle, boy. You fighting over a floppy disk to save your assignment. Yes, back on the hill, man. Happy to be back.
Absolutely. And so before we get into it, let's get into what brings you on the hill. You're here for a fireside chat.
Yeah.
What should we expect from that? Do you even know yet?
I don't know. My job is when the campus calls, to answer the call. You know, I'm always looking for ways to come back to the campus in some capacity other than comedy, only because I've done that here a mm-hmm. couple of times, and I feel like if there's any knowledge people can glean from me, then I'm happy to try and extend it and talk about the state of the nation, talk about just career stuff. I'm most excited just to take questions from the kids, man. Like, that's, to me, having that type of access with people who walk the walk, like, all this is like real. Like, every time I come back to the campus, it's like, it's weird, it's different, because it's like an evolution of me as a man
mm-hmm.
that I have to, like, stop and acknowledge for a second. Like, all right, come back, go to a game. All right, come back and be a part of homecoming. All right, come back and perform and do comedy. All right, speak at convocation. All right, come back and have a serious conversation with the president and Alonda Thomas, and also give the kids access to your knowledge.
Like, your visits are maturing with you.
They're maturing, and so that's weird to think that would have ever been my place in this ecosystem. You know, because when I think about, you know, folks who came back to talk to us, you know, I think about Pam Oliver from Fox Sports, mm-hmm. you know. She came back numerous times during my 4 year, during my 5 years here.
I'm a super senior too.
You know, we got lucky, man. We had Gordon Graham, who was at CNN and moved over to Fox, Florida News Channel mm-hmm. at the time, and was an instructor. He was giving us game. Like, so many dope people came back and just talked.
You said something really cool during that answer. You said, answer the call is your obligation. You're dope for a lot of reasons, but one of the reasons that you're really dope is because you're kind of this guy who's steeped in legacy, whether it's your dad, whether it's the institutions. You're from Birmingham, which is just a city that is rife with legacy. Does that add to who you are, and does that give you a responsibility in the work that you do outside of the commentary and the comedy and the journalism?
I think so. Like, I try not to. I mean, for the people who don't know, you know, my father was a journalist who primarily covered the civil rights, not just the civil rights movement, black struggle as a whole globally. Like, mm-hmm. my pops was embedded in riots in South Africa and Zimbabwe. Like, he was anywhere black people have been getting mistreated, my daddy been there with a tape recorder and got shot at.
You want me to tell you a cool story? My daddy and your daddy have a connection. Okay. Not a connection that means anything to you, but I've been hearing the name Roy Wood in my house growing up forever, because when my daddy was 18, he's 67 now, he wrote a poem and submitted it to just one black man's opinion.
One black man's opinion, my father's,
and he read it.
Weekly commentary.
And he hadn't let anybody forget, since he's 18 years old, Roy Wood read my poem.
Yo, we might have it. We're in the process now of digitizing a lot of my pop's old reel-to-reels and cassette tapes to really see what's left of his commentaries that were... That aired every week on black radio stations across the country. But, you know, for me, I never thought about it as, like, as I was coming up, I must take care of the people and do stuff for the people. But then as I just started growing, you just care. And it's a lot of it boils down to, if I don't do it, who's going to do it? And I don't know if I trust them.
So I don't know if I trust them.
My pops, you know, my mom is FAMU. My pops is... Morehouse. My father's taught journalism at FAMU along with four other black colleges over the course of his career, and the work that he's covered. You know, my mother right now entering her 30th year at Miles College in Birmingham. And, you know, it's a private black school, but it still has a lot of the same DNA. So when I look at my parents, I think that's just something that's just in my DNA. It didn't kick in till my 30s. It took a while for me to start caring about folks.
You could have fooled me.
I was very selfish in my 20s.
Your comedy is conscious. You're kind of like out of the vein of Carlin or Dick Gregory.
None of that kicked in until about 31, 32 years old. Huh. I started stand-up when I was 19. Everything was about me and what I'm going through and what I'm mad about. And then a switch flipped, and then 4 years later, I had my son. Mm-hmm. And from like 31 to 37, that metamorphosis started. And then that first stand-up special I did, Father Figure, in 2017, I'm glad that was my first one, because that was a flag in the sand about how I saw the world at that time. And then it was into a little more, let's talk about race. Let's talk about political dysfunction. Let's really go there, where I feel like I had enough life experience to really dive into that type of material.
If you would have just asked me on the fly, I would have thought that it was your journalism background and being steeped in journalism that kind of gave you that perspective. It's cool to know that it was a different...
Well, no. But comedy is journalism to me. Stand-up comedy is a form of journalism because you're reporting. You're either reporting on what you see in the world, or you're reporting on what's happening to you personally. That's essentially the only two types of jokes that exist.
Sure.
It's a joke about me, or it's a joke about us. Or y'all. Like, that's...
Does it give you a better outlook or a more bleak outlook? Does it make the bright stuff bleaker or the bleak stuff brighter?
It depends on my mood when I write the joke. But journalistically speaking, the idea of getting to the bottom of the issue and asking the right questions, that's still part of my joke structure in terms of how I write and how I compose material and how I put my thoughts together. But if I have a way to really dig in on a point or make an observation that nobody else would have made, or that no one else would have cared to go to the depth to really look at. Mm-hmm.
You got several of them, just speaking of, I mean, because I really am a fan of you, not just because I'm interviewing. I love your stand-up and how you dive through it, and you've got the one, and I said this before I even heard you say the joke, but you just made it funny. The cashier is sometimes the last line of defense for a person who may be struggling in their personal life.
That's your last friend.
That's your last friend.
Yeah, crazy people only got the cashier, or they might have a server if they're a regular at a restaurant, mm-hmm. and they go and they only sit in that person's section because that's their friend. Like, that's it. Yeah, so the idea of, which is what was interesting about this special, the one I just did for Hulu, Lonely Flowers.
Oh, yeah.
That became essentially a dissertation on loneliness and connection, the lack thereof. It didn't start like that. I was just writing jokes, and the more I started looking at, there was a commonality to a lot of the jokes. I went, oh, okay, well, mm-hmm. once I had about 30 minutes on how you don't have a cashier, gas is pay at the pump. There used to be a buddy come out to the pump, talk to you, he gone. You know, the idea that in retail, there's no one there to help you find the clothes or the whatever. Like, they gone. So.
But then I like how you reversed that and said, but for black folk, we have a different problem because sometimes we can't lose the person in the store because they're following.
You used to have somebody follow you around the store. They cared so much, they would just follow us. Even if we didn't want them to follow us, they would just follow us. Yeah. So you have like 30 minutes on it, and then I just start talking to myself, like, all right, well, what do I feel about loneliness? What do I feel about connection? Okay, well, you've seen the problem. How do you fix it? And so that's kind of what that special is. If you look at it in three acts, it's essentially, we are lonely. Here are ways we can all try to connect. And here's what happened when I tried one of those ways.
Hmm. Do you see in any way your work as being the last line of defense for somebody? Because just like that cashier may be, you know, there's somebody who's watching you right now who's going through the worst part of their life. Do you ever think about that, that you're reaching people that you'll never know? And does that give any oomph to the work, or are you just doing your thing?
I'm conscious of it, but I don't let that be the driving star. I don't think any one joke is going to fix anything for anybody. But if it gets you through the day, I've gotten some very, very kind DMs from people who watch the special.
Yeah.
Who are legitimately going through some tough stuff on isolation. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's cool. I remember it doesn't happen often. Well, not anymore, but in the early days, like first 5-6 years of my career, every now and then after a show, somebody would come up and shake my hand. Had a good show. I enjoyed the show. I'm suffering from insert tragedy here.
Yeah.
I just came from the funeral of the, I just found out from my doctor that I got the thing. And da, da, da. Whatever it was, they would be kind enough to come up and say, hey. And so I figure for every person that shakes my hand, that probably represents, you know, 40 or 50 people who don't.
Or more.
Yeah. And so I'm cognizant of it. You know, comedy helps me. I mean, comedians are all going through stuff. So it's fun for me to sit and watch. Like, I like stand up too. Huh?
Yeah. Like, you know, and you still watch it and consume it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was watching Ali Sadiq on a regular. Like,
oh, man. That, yeah.
Ali Sadiq, as a comedian, you got to watch Ali Sadiq once just for consumption and then again to be jealous. I watch it as a fan, and I go back and watch it as a hater. Yeah, flip-flop it.
Speaking of that, is there anything that you haven't done that you still want to do? Because you've conquered so much territory. You've been in the radio, which is another thing, too. You're one of the last megastars to transition from radio to cable, as you say it. Most people go the other way. You're one of the last people, and you probably will be the last because it's just a phasing out form. How was that, by the way?
Just the radio is a piece. What's funny is that FAMU is where I got my start in terrestrial radio. So a lot of people think I worked for WANM, but I didn't. I did a brief, like, news, I think I had like a radio news class with Leonita Inge. And, you know, Dr. Inge, she had us over there in the radio station, but she did like a news story or whatever. I cut my teeth. They're gone now, but it was Hot 105.7. was the hip hop station in Tallahassee in the late 90s, early aughts. And I interned over there for Van Wilson in the mornings, and then I worked with DJ Dap in the afternoons. I would go back to the station in the afternoons. So I learned how to do radio news, you know, picking 3-4 stories, writing the copy, setting up my reads, like basically doing what my pops did back in the 50s.
Yeah.
And then I learned the art of morning radio conversation and crosstalk and just how to weave in and out of conversations, how to interact with callers. We took a lot of calls. And then DJ Dap in the afternoons, Dap showed me just strictly how to run the board. How to think like a DJ, you know. Like in the mornings, I learned how to be a co-host. Dap was the beginnings of all right, you have this song coming up. You need to think about this commercial. While that song is playing, you need to take this call and get this winner. You need to do the solicit. And when you get that call, you need to have that call edited and ready to play back after this song. But if you need more time, move this song up. That song's on. Mm-hmm. Like the trigonometry, that's the air traffic control that's sure. happening in your head.
I want to thank you for your time. But before I let you go, I have a specific question, because this is art and culture programming. Okay. That's always been, you know, my fascination and the fascination with this spot. Is comedy an art? You said it's journalism. Is comedy also an art?
Absolutely.
I agree. So many people say it's not.
Now, all comedy's not good art. Some stuff is pristine and beautiful, and some comedy is graffiti on a freight train. But they're both
art. And both valuable, too. Just for the graffiti artist that might be waiting for me outside, right. You're going to get me jumped.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying, but the people who like high art won't respect graffiti.
Sure.
And the people who love graffiti and street art, they don't want all that hoity-toity.
Until somebody
sipping
like
red wine nonsense in an art gallery.
Until somebody like Roy Wood or Basquiat comes and makes the high class people like the graffiti, or vice versa.
They bridge it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, you get the Wonderkins that come along once, twice a generation. But yeah, comedy is, it's downright a beautiful art form. It's the only art form. It's the only medium that everybody accidentally does. We're all kind of funny. We've all made someone laugh. It doesn't make you a comedian. But I think because you know you have made someone laugh, it makes you think you know funny and you know how to do it. And I know funny. That's not funny. You're not.
Yeah.
You don't know funny. You got lucky one day at work.
Roy, it was a pleasure to have you.
Thank you.
Thank everybody out there for joining us for another episode of Speaking Up. Brother, I hope you get your flowers, and I hope they're not lonely.
Man, thank you, brother. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Yeah.